Hi, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. A network of Arctic observers spanning nearly all of Alaska's northern coast is helping to center Indigenous knowledge and climate change research. The Alaska Arctic Observatory and Knowledge Hub, or AOK for short, is comprised of local Inupiaq observers who work with the University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers to document how the Arctic is changing. Donna Hauser is the network's lead scientist.
Observers have seen some really, you know, big environmental changes, but they're also documenting what does that mean for the community and from their perspective in terms of the traditional activities.
That can be everything from climate change's impact on berry picking to seal hunting. On a daily or weekly basis, observers send the AOK team notes on sea ice and wind conditions, air and water temperatures, animal and community activities that researchers then compile into a database. Since 2006, the network has collected 10,000 observations. Roberta Glenn-Barade is Inupiaq and from Utqiagvik and serves as the AOK's project coordinator. She says the network has helped center the needs and perspectives of communities on the front line of climate change.
Rather than having these narratives framed by outside researchers who have kind of an understanding about Alaska or Indigenous people, but they don't quite hit the mark. And so what we do at AOK is allow the observers, their observations and knowledge and expertise to tell the story.
By collecting year-round data on the ground, Glenn-Barade says AOK has been able to track the impacts of climate change that current climate change research isn't focusing on. One example is how changing winds are making travel more difficult.
If it's so windy and it's blowing all the snow off the tundra, then you're not able to ride your snow machine out to go hunting. Or it's affecting the sea ice and travel on the sea ice, and understanding that that travel is really heavily impacted by the year-to-year conditions. And it's not really a story that's told.
Glenn-Barade said she'd like to see more funding dedicated to promoting Indigenous knowledge within Western science. AOK is currently looking at ways to expand and make its data more available to the Arctic communities. Southeast Alaska has seen an explosion in cruise ship tourism in just the last 2 years, and communities are struggling to cope with the crowding, congestion, and simple exhaustion that comes with managing the rapid growth. Next summer, Juneau is planning to limit cruise traffic to 5 ships a day, the result of a newly negotiated agreement between the city and the cruise line industry. But Sitka's only cruise ship dock is privately owned, and although its owner has said he plans to strategically manage ship visits next year, he may not satisfy Sitkin's looking for a solution. For Coast Alaska's Tourism Today series, KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Every couple of hours, we hear them coming. When the Pebble Pub slowly crawls through downtown Sitka, the multi-passenger bicycle turns heads. As the lime-green vehicle passes City Hall, it makes a left onto an ever-so-slightly elevated street. The hill is barely perceptible to the human eye, but the 15 cyclists holler louder, pushing themselves over the hump.
There we go.
An hour later, they come by again. Around and around the Pedal Pub goes, stopping at bars on Lincoln Street to break up the passengers' cardio workouts with a beer. It's a sound unique to the summer months in Sitka, when hundreds of thousands of cruise ship visitors disembark from their floating cities to revel in the beauty of Southeast Alaska. But another sound Sitkans have gotten familiar with is this. A fleet of tour buses runs almost nonstop when a ship is in port. Unlike other Southeast communities, Sitka's cruise dock isn't downtown. It's 6 miles north. That means busing tourists is a big part of the equation, and not everyone is happy about it.
I'd go home with a headache, nausea, short of breath, my eyes were burning and irritated.
That's Peter Hagen. He's a local painter and contractor. This summer, he spent a month working on a house next to the state highway, buses passing by every few minutes.
It was like I was living in L.A.
Hagen says he's pro-tourism, but the experience cemented in his mind the idea that cruise traffic in Sitka was getting out of control, and both people and the environment were feeling the effects in a very big way.
They should see Southeast Alaska for what it is, and that's a world-class preserve. We don't need floating cities docking and slides and race car and SpaceX rocket launches and thrill rides. They're missing the very essence of what we are.
The summer of 2023 blew the previous year's record-breaking cruise season right out of the water. 585,000 passengers visited Sitka from late April to early October. With that came big business and an economic recovery after two quiet pandemic years. For many Sitkans, it was an opportunity. New tour businesses and food carts flourished, and Sitka's main street was closed to traffic and turned into a pedestrian mall for over 70 days of the summer. But it also brought congestion and concerns about bus traffic, e-bikes, and pedestrian safety. And with those concerns came some community pushback.
It's just absolute chaos.
Larry Edwards and a group of around 40 other Sitkans tried twice this fall to get a ballot proposition to cap the number of cruise visitors out to voters in a special election.
I feel that the cruise industry thinks it's the planning director of the city and that we have to march to its orders. I think we needed to take control back.
Both petitions failed to pass a review by the city's attorney, who cited a variety of potential legal pitfalls in attempting to restrict the use of a private dock. A similar question in Bar Harbor, Maine, will be the litmus test for whether a municipality can legally limit cruise traffic at a private dock. A federal judge is expected to issue a ruling on that case soon. The day Edwards' second petition was denied, Sitka Dock Company owner Chris McGraw announced he's imposing his own limits on the size and number of ships allowed to dock at the terminal each day.
It kind of all got hit at once, and I think we're now, you know, working to try to get caught up.
McGraw thinks if COVID hadn't happened, the community's adjustment would have been a little easier as the cruise numbers scaled up a little slower. He's hoping that curbing the number of ships and passengers, staggering arrivals, and building new infrastructure, like a theater at the dock, will help better disperse the passengers, cut down on bus traffic, and relieve some pressure.
I guess my message would be, you know, let's look at our numbers and see if, you know, we can slow everything down a little bit, but then also work to catch up our infrastructure, catch up our tours, so that we can meet the demand that we'd like to see. And that is ultimately healthy, in my opinion, for the community.
October was pretty quiet in Sitka. Some restaurants and shops closed down for the month to catch their breath. But in November, the city's tourism task force was back at work hosting its first town hall, inviting locals to take stock of the summer, especially the level of cruise tourism. The town hall was just the first of several planned between now and the task force's spring deadline to make recommendations to the assembly. The public process is slow. Even if the Sitka Assembly could decide on a course of action by next spring, it would not change the fact that the summer of 24 is going to look a lot like the summer of 23. Even if Sitka's private cruise dock implements changes, they wouldn't be in effect until 2025. In the meantime, Sitkans are collectively riding their own version of the pedal pub, heading up and one day over the hump. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
The top election officials in Maine yesterday disqualified Donald Trump from the state's primary ballot due to his role in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. In Anchorage, a lawsuit in federal district court seeks to have Trump disqualified from Alaska's 2024 presidential election ballot, too. But so far, it hasn't advanced. Texas tax advisor John Anthony Castro filed legal challenges in more than two dozen states, including Alaska. Castro claims that Trump is disqualified from the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which bars people who have engaged in insurrection against the United States from holding office. Castro, a long-shot Republican candidate for president, spoke about his claims to a reporter outside a New Hampshire courthouse in October.
The question is whether Donald J. Trump provided aid and comfort to an insurrection, which we all know that he did.
Most of the cases Castro filed have either been dismissed or he voluntarily dropped them. He filed the Alaska case in late September. Online records suggest Castro hasn't legally served copies of the lawsuit to the defendants, Trump and Alaska Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom, who oversees Alaska's Division of Elections. Without the required legal services, defendants don't have to file a response. Trump has always maintained he did nothing wrong on January 6, 2021, when a throng of his supporters left his rally at the White House and stormed the U.S. Capitol. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for listening.